Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 38, and we really don't know what we're going to talk about today. I guess we can start off with CES, because last week was CES, and we had kind of a special live show from Las Vegas. Ben and I were there, and we, you know, got to see everything that there was to see, which was just a lot of assistant stuff. A really big Google booth, a couple new Wear OS things here and there, a bunch of Android TVs all over the show floor. And yeah, it turns out, though, that there were a couple things that were kind of left over from CES that we either just didn't get around to covering, or things that were kind of seemed like they should have been CES announcements, but they ended up kind of coming in the wake of CES. I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like this year most of the things came like the week before CES. But yeah, there have been a couple things that have dropped since CES. What's new in your neck of the woods?
Not much. It's been raining, so if it looks darker than usual, that's because there's no natural sunlight right now. But other than that, we have a nice, kind of slow post-CES week, which kind of fits, actually. Kind of works out.
Yeah, it does. One thing that we might manage to put up was the our hands-on / video. I mean, usually when we say hands-on, we're talking about a consumer technology product, but we did kind of a hands-on with Google's booth. We rode the ride, as you probably know, and we got our free Google Home Hub. Actually, for those of you that are watching the live stream, this is my sand. The review unit that Google sent me a little while back was the black model, and I was really hoping that we would get something other than the black model, and now I finally have my sand. But I do think that I've hit peak Google Home in my house.
Peak Google Home.
I've gotten to the point where I can't really add more.
you have to start deprecating the old speakers from 2 years ago. That is quite a statement that we're calling.
Yeah, kind of. But at the same time, I don't feel like any of them are deprecatable yet.
Absolutely not. They're still solid devices. They're still all being sold, even though that $129 Google Home is a questionable sell in this day and age.
Yeah, and the other thing is that the Home Hub is not necessarily an obvious upgrade compared to, like, for instance, in my bathroom right here, I have a standard Google Home, and the Home Hub is not really an upgrade to that one because it's, you know, you're getting a screen, but you're also getting worse sound. So, you know, I can't just like swap that one out without thinking about, okay, do I really want a screen more than I want good sound in the shower? And to me, the answer is no. And the other thing is that I have a lot of minis, but I have the minis in places in my house where I don't really need a Google Home. Like I literally have a mini in my closet.
That is shocking. You could not have surprised me more.
I mean, I guess I feel like I've mentioned that before. I actually have a Google Home Mini in the closet because, you know, I feel like a very common use case for them is asking what the weather is or asking about your day, like in the morning when you're getting dressed or whatever. So when I'm standing in my closet in the morning getting dressed, it's just convenient to have it right there. But that's another example is like I only use that Google Home Mini like once a day. So it's like having the hub in there as an upgrade to the Home Mini is a little bit overkill.
Yeah, definitely.
Actually, probably a lot overkill. It's getting to the point where it feels silly, actually.
Like we said before with homes, it doesn't necessarily hurt to have a lot for the whole home groups and the whole like consistent sound system throughout your house. But beyond that, I can't really imagine a closet one. One in the closet. That is.
Well, I just told you why. And it's only useful for like 5 seconds out of the day. But, you know, if you have a bunch of Google Homes or Lego laying around that you don't have any use for, then You find ways to use them. I'm actually thinking about putting one in my shed. I don't know.
The power, that's an interesting power cable story.
Yeah, taking like getting buying one of those long, orange extension cords from outdoor extension cords from like Amazon and just rigging it up out there so that I have one. I don't know. It's a, I mean, that would be used even less, and I don't know how the humidity would affect it, but yeah, the fabric would probably get moldy or something.
Ew. That is the downside of the fabrics. That is 100% the downside of fabrics.
Actually, now that I think about it, I should probably give away this Google Home Hub as like a giveaway. Maybe I'll do a tweet later and just give it away to whoever wants it. My mother-in-law's really mad at me because she just bought one for $99 like last week. I tweeted about this actually at a white elephant. I don't know what people call them, but there's various names for them. But basically, a white elephant. My in-laws, they do a white elephant with like a $100 limit, and so someone bought a Google Home Hub, and my grandfather-in-law called it a Googler, very endearingly. I tweeted about
That's pretty
that.
good. That's honestly
Yeah,
pretty good.
he was like, "I
That's
want my Googler. Stop stealing the Googler." And then I had to inform him afterward that a Googler is someone who works at Google, and that I would know of all people. But yeah. So, my mother-in-law didn't win it, and she really wanted it, and so she bought one. And then come to find out that I got one for free at CES, one that I definitely don't need. She was a little bit peeved. So that's my Google Home Hub story.
thinking about the tangent about putting a Google Home in your shed, I think you have the original bases for the Google Home, right? Those bottom bases, the metallic bases, that's one solution to it.
Oh yeah.
If you're serious about that.
Yes, if I was actually serious about, I mean, if I were to do it would probably be the Google Home Mini, and I would probably hang it, use it, and wing it, one of those, like, I don't know, one of those dock like wall hanger things that you can buy on Amazon. So yeah, that the base, the metal base, wouldn't apply in that case. I'd be stuck with fabric. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to put anything more than like the $30 Home Mini outside. Yeah, and I was also thinking about my car. I mean, or my truck, my wife's car. We could just put a mini in each one and connect them to the sound system via something. How would I connect them? I don't know.
Well, it connects it you can connect it over Bluetooth.
Yeah, I could do Bluetooth.
The power source in the network is the real story there.
Yeah, you'd need a whole tethering solution that was running 24/7, or having just a car that has internet built in, which, that's a thing, but I don't have one of those. So yeah, that's that. My microphone sounds weird.
Yeah, it's scratchy. That's
That's weird. Well, I hope it doesn't ruin the audio recording. Maybe you can talk about our next topic and I'll try and fix it real quick.
so definitely. So, as CES came to an end, we had a few of the hands-ons from team down there. One of the more interesting things was Tech 21 made this crazy NFC connected keyboard for the Pixel 3 XL, and it's a fabric cloth case, and it's we'll definitely put in the show notes, but it looks quite wild. You can put it up in this trifold design, and then they're just keys, a full QWERTY keyboard laid out in front of you. The 3 XL is a pretty big phone, so it does make sense, but this is 100% a gadget, and I kind of want one, even though I can't quantify when I would ever use this. It's not practical, it just looks kind of cool, and I hope it goes on sale soon. So that was like a tiny interesting bit of phone news. In other stuff,
How do I
we
sell
also
it?
had much better.
Okay, cool, sweet. On that note, the Tech 21 thing, I just had a great idea, And that great idea is that you should only write stories for the next week using just that, or whenever you should get one and only write stories using just that case in the WordPress app and see how that goes.
No, I'm going to say no right now.
All right.
I'm not multitasking on Android for work. Oh, no, no. That's terrifying. That's a nightmare.
On another note, I'm very confused by that case because apparently it solely connects to your phone via NFC, which I didn't know that. I'm not aware off the top of my head of any other accessories that have an ongoing kind of steady connection via NFC. That's something that Ben brought up last week. Maybe he knows the answer to this, but it's an interesting little tidbit about that thing. As far as, you know, he tried to confirm with them, like, does it have Bluetooth LE or something like that that it uses to maintain connection? And they said, no, it's just NFC.
So I guess the joke is whether NFC is a better connection than Bluetooth on Android.
Yeah, that's a good takeaway.
So the other thing, other big hands-on, is you with the Focals.
Yeah, so I got to check out Focals by North, which they were at the Amazon booth. And it's just kind of loosely related to Android. It's more probably directly related to my fascination or my previous fascination with Google Glass more than it is related to Google or Android directly, because they were at the Amazon booth. And yeah, so basically Focals by North, they're a company that's building, they're building like AR glasses that are, I don't know, like
the closest purely thing for notifications.
They're the closest thing we've seen yet. Well, yeah, kind of. I wouldn't say they're purely for notifications after having worn them, but they're the closest thing we've seen yet, I think, to something that's built primarily for fashion first. Like, it's for fashion design, but then secondly, it seems to be kind of an AR glasses. So compared to Google Glass, there's no like big,
prism
in the front. There's no, you don't control it by tapping the side. You control it using a separate ring accessory. I'm trying to turn my volume up. I don't know. People are trying to turn the gain up. Is that any better? Maybe you'll have feedback, but, yeah, the recording for this afterwards is going to be, it's going to be terrible. So apologize for that in advance. I'll try to equalize the audio as much as I can in post. That's what it is in just like at a broader, like high level. I was really impressed by it personally. I was impressed by it because it feels like the first consumer AR glass product that I actually feel like I might be able to pull off wearing on a daily basis. Like, I feel like I might be able to wear it every day and not everyone would know that I was even wearing it. I think that's kind of like the holy grail for making AR glasses hit the mainstream, is that they need to be indistinguishable from what I'm wearing right now, because glasses are a long-standing fashion tradition that no technology company, as Google found out, is going to be able to just disrupt overnight. Yeah, obviously that's not going to go well, as we saw on the Google Glass fashion runways. Yes, it is. It does seem to be primarily centered around sending you notifications. It's very lightweight. The OS is very lightweight. There's not that much you can do with it in terms of sheer functionality, which to me is actually a good thing, because I feel like we see the opposite with products like Vuzix Blade, which are also kind of, they try to be kind of consumer facing AR glasses, but they just do not. They do not have anything close to a good user experience for, you know, the average person. So, I mean, there's like, I think on the Focals by North, there's like five main screens, and one is like weather. One of them is like based on whatever calendar app you want to sync up, and it will give you like what's going on the rest of your day. One of them obviously is like the time and date card. And then There's a couple more. I think one of them's like phone notifications. And interestingly, one of the primary way that focals are expanding their functionality is not by adding tons of features to the glasses themselves, but by just having Amazon Alexa. So, in that case, that adds however many things Alexa can do, you can do on focals. And so, yeah, functionality is pretty good. I don't know. I like them a lot. I'm really excited to get a unit and actually check them out longer term.
I guess more broadly, my question with augmented reality glasses is whether people who don't wear glasses will be interested in putting on basically clear frames to get notifications and voice commands and whatnot. That is my biggest curiosity in terms of adoption.
Clear frames.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like non-prescription
People,
frames?
yeah. And
Gotcha.
I guess there's sunglasses. That's a way to do that. Everybody likes sunglasses. Everybody can use sunglasses, most likely. But that's an it's not a natural smart it's not a natural thing like a smartphone in which everybody needs a smartphone. Everybody needs glasses as a form factor. But focusing on the focals, pun unintended, the idea of wearing a ring is also interesting to me, in that it looks quite bulky, and in terms of like containing it and storing it, I guess you can put it back into the case that the focals come in. But at the same time, I'm not sure how comfortable people will be wearing a gigantic ring to use this. How is your experience with it?
Well, first of all, I think I'll talk a little bit about what you said first about how not everyone wears glasses. And if you look at AR glasses as needing to be kind of a smartphone successor of sorts, then I think that's a valid concern. I think that you're right. I mean, only a certain percentage of the population wears glasses. And therefore, I mentioned Vuzix Blade, and I kind of, I'm not a huge fan of that product, but they are taking the sunglasses approach. Which is obviously something anyone could wear, whether or not you need prescriptions or not. But I see AR glasses more as it could be theoretically down the line a phone replacement for some people. But I see it more as kind of like an Apple Watch or any kind of smartwatch as kind of supplementary right now. If it's a supplement, if it is a supplement, then it doesn't necessarily need to be for everyone. This is not going to be anyone's primary computing platform in the first place. Whereas in this day and age, the smartphone is a lot of people's primary computing platform. I don't think an Apple Watch is, even Series 10 Apple Watch is ever going to be, the primary way that people interact with the web, with applications, with various, with their, everyone's jobs are on the internet with their jobs. I don't think anyone's gonna be doing their job on an Apple Watch, And so in that sense, I'm not really concerned about it. I just see focals as kind of taking advantage of the market that may want or may see it as an obvious thing to do to just replace their glasses with focals. And I mean, I'm definitely one of those people. And on top of that, I feel like from a fashion perspective, they're approaching it kind of like they're Warby Parker, and at least they're trying to, present themselves that way. And so that's also attractive to me, considering I'm wearing Warby Parker glasses right now. That is not sponsored, by the way. What was your second concern after that? I forgot. Oh, the ring.
The ring-based navigation.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. I think, what do you think?
I don't think people want a separate thing to hold on, to keep, to manage, to power. I'm more of the opinion that everything should be on the control should be on the stem of the glasses. And that, like, physically, it makes sense to be touching one, being touching what you're actually controlling. And in terms of just like physical objects, I think it makes much more sense to keep everything together.
I don't know. I think my take on it is the Ring is not perfect. I definitely don't love the Ring because it adds a whole other, aspect to this device. It's like you have to remember to charge two different things. I guess, it does dock in a Spectacles-like glasses case that also has a little dock for the Ring, and I'm sure the Ring charges in what, like, I mean, the battery in there has got to be like 50 milliamp hours or something.
And it lasts like 3 days or so, or something.
So it probably is fine, but and it's not perfect. And I guess after my hands-on with vocals and talking to the team, my takeaway on it was kind of that it's not perfect, but it's better than the way Glass handled it. And the way Glass handled it was using voice. And having an always listening key, hot word, and also, like you said, that touch strip on the side of the device. They really drove home this point that the touch strip on the side of the device is really off-putting to people. I think they even have maybe some research that has shown that it's off-putting. I'm not sure. But I never thought of it that way. I mean, as someone who used glass for, at least a year, on and off, I never thought about the fact that walking around in the street and looking like you're using a computer, like appearing to everyone else that you're using a computer, especially in combination with the fact that it had a camera, is it just makes you, feel, it makes you maybe seem creepy. It maybe makes you seem, like a cyborg. It maybe has like a lot of these kind of negative connotations, I think. Not to mention, the fact that you really kind of are detached from what you're doing if you're up here kind of scrolling around. I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, having your phone out in public when you're standing around with other people or something and scrolling, that's something I think that is widely kind of like appreciated now as being kind of rude. And I feel like walking down the street like this, I don't know. It seems better to me, given the experience of actually using it, seems better to me to have the Ring. But
I have to argue the opposite point, actually. Just in terms, okay, so people, when you're using your phone, it seems rude. But wouldn't people find it more rude if they weren't aware that you're using your technology device? In my line of thinking, the idea of of having the controls at your temple, it's more like a disclosure. You're disclosing that you're using technology. But if the controls in the palm of your hand, you're being secretive about it, you're being discreet. People don't know if you're they can't be too sure if you're actually paying attention. So
Yeah,
that's
no,
my devil's argument about that.
I brought that exact argument up to them, and their argument back, well, I mean, they didn't really have an argument back, so to speak, but they did kind of double down on this idea that being discreet is more likely to make these more quickly accepted than. The barriers that, I mean, maybe this is a flaw on their part, but I feel like Vocals is prioritizing normalizing these glasses to an extreme, like to whatever fault it takes. We want to make these as close as possible to normal glasses and to seem like normal glasses to everyone around you. And so they made the call that, yes, there is an expense of non-disclosure. And other people around you not being exactly aware that you might be completely not listening to them or not interacting with them. That's a valid concern. But the downside of this kind of interaction method makes it less likely that people would see them as normal, or it would make them, kind of like glass, very foreign. On top of that, we haven't mentioned this, but Focals don't have a camera. And so there's a whole level, I mean, that's another aspect of like, that takes away a lot of functionality. I don't know if you remember some of like the
Absolutely.
early. Takes away, like some of the early Glass videos was, just how cool it was to like have first person video of like you swinging your kids around in your front yard or whatever. that's like one of the shots that just sticks out in my brain for some reason. Or doing being a trap artist, whatever. You know, like that, you lose that whole, you know, selling point. And that's another thing. It's like a trade-off that they took, it seems like, because their primary focus, at least with the first generation of these, is to make them as normal and as accepted as possible.
Yeah.
And all of this said, you know, coming away from that meeting and coming away from trying them, I feel like that might be the smart approach, because, you know, we could see version 2, version 5 that add more functionality. But I feel like the big hump that these companies have to get over is normalizing these and making them not creepy or not weird, and kind of undoing the glass hole kind of situation that Google created. So anyways, that's Focals. Again, it's not super Google related because it doesn't have Google Assistant yet. They did say that they gave me the boilerplate answer of, you know, we're not closed-minded to any additions later, but, so yeah, that's Focals. What else do we have on here?
There's some Samsung news.
Yeah. So my least favorite topic, honestly, if I'm completely honest, Samsung is my least favorite thing to talk about because it's also the thing I'm least knowledgeable about, I think. So Samsung Galaxy S10 will be announced at an event next month in San Francisco, and there's going to be concurrent events elsewhere, at least in the United Kingdom, because our Damien will be there. So that's a big deal. But speaking of the S10, we saw a little bit of a leak, it looks like, a Samsung blog post, which kind of confirmed or maybe confirmed the S10 design. We don't really know.
The key part of that leak was the Infinity O, is that what they're calling it, I believe?
Yeah.
The notch replacement. So let's just real talk. What do you think of that compared to the notch?
I think that it's the inevitable next step. I mean, I think that we'll see. I don't know. I think what's going to happen is I think that Apple is going to move, they're just going to miniaturize their knobs. Like, I think they're going to keep all of the hardware stuff in the exact same place with the same sensors, because they kind of have to. They have way more sensors than Samsung does if they're going to keep doing Face ID, especially. I feel like they're going to just keep miniaturizing the notch until it's like, you know, in a couple of years, it's just gone. To where they just have either stuff under the display or, you know, just barely poking through with like maybe like four or five little Infinity O's, if that makes sense. In the meantime, it seems like Samsung's trying to beat everyone to the punch by just doing the camera on the front and nothing else, hiding the microphone or the speaker up above in the bezel, and, you know, just doing that single punch hole. And I think that's probably the direction things are going. I mean, the notch seemed like it would be short-lived from the very beginning, in my opinion. At least that's how I see it.
So what do you think Google is doing this year? Was that much too early?
I think we're going to see another notch year. I think Google's probably, I don't know. I don't want to be quoted on this. But I think we're going to see a refinement of that. I think we're going to see just a smaller notch.
I agree. In the same way that Pixel 1 and Pixel 2 were very close in design, I think Google needs to at least sticks to the current design, to the general design, for 2 years or so before moving to new technology. So more refinement, not a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that Google is smart, and I think they will be smart to be more iterative in their updates than we see in some places across the industry. I mean, I think of OnePlus, where it's like the fundamental of design of that phone changes every 6 months, it feels like. You know, and like that's the antithesis to what I think Google should do. And I mean, I guess the exact opposite of that is how the iPhone 6, 6S, 7, 8 were all, you know, identical, basically, in terms of the core design principles. And they're all iterations of each other. And I think that Google would be smart to follow that model because they already have enough risks, and they're still so new to hardware, and they still have so many little things that we know about. I mean, you know, the potential that RAM problem that cropped up this year, it might be a hardware thing, and, you know, the screen issues we had with the 2XL last year, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like they are smart to not be super experimental and not spread their wings too far too fast, because they already have enough problems. At least that's how I feel.
Yeah, that's very fair. To wrap up some of the Samsung news, we might also see the foldable phone. I forgot what the weak name of this is. Galaxy F, I think somebody suggested that. Yeah. Galaxy X, maybe.
Yeah.
So a few weeks ago, we saw this leak of a rumored Xiaomi device that also has a foldable design. And it's a tri-fold design where you have three sections of the screen, and then you bend the left and right one, so you just use the center as a phone mode. And I think that is clearly the better design to what we're seeing with Samsung, where they have two distinct displays. So it'll be very interesting if we end up with the first generation of foldables already almost replaced by the time that the more superior iteration comes out. And again, I believe you're of the opinion that foldable phones are just a fad. And I guess we'll see what happens when the first ones actually come out and we can stop just dealing with the leaks and rumors.
Yeah, I probably won't be interested in foldable phones until Google or Apple does one.
Oh, Google.
Google is more likely to do one first than Apple is, but I don't know. I'm not really interested in the category personally. I don't get it yet. I still need more time to think about it and figure out who they're for. But I, as of now, it doesn't seem like they're for me. Maybe I'll change my mind later after I actually use one. But yeah, that's pretty much everything for Samsung. There were a few other really notable stories this week. One of them is the ongoing, and this will probably be a topic in the next several weeks. I mean, I'm thinking probably for the next, actually probably the next year. Every week we'll probably hear some little bit of RCS news. This past, like December, Verizon finally switched on RCS for the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL. As you may know, Sprint is already doing the universal profile on pretty much all Android phones, I think. US Cellular is also already on the universal profile for all Android phones. AT&T is working on it, but we're still a little, it's going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. But this week, the big news was that Google Fi, recently known as Project Fi, which our good friend Nick Fox tweeted 500 something days ago that Google was working on bringing the universal profile to Google Fi and that it would come, quote, soon. And here we are almost 2 years later or more than 2 years later, or yeah, right around 2 years later. And it's finally here. So this week, if you're on a Fi supported, so like an officially sanctioned Google Fi phone.
Designed for Fi is their terminology. But yeah. So definitely the Pixels, the Android ones that Google released, and several LG and Moto devices, you will have RCS on Project Fi. And this is, like you said at the top, long time coming, but good that Google's MVNO finally has it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot has changed. I mean, so if you're in the Google bubble and you're a Pixel fan and you're a Google homeowner and you're kind of like, you know, us, like fanatics, then a lot has changed really quickly. I mean, in the last 2 months. And what I mean by that is if you're a Pixel owner, specifically a Pixel 3 owner, before December, you only had access to the universal profile if you were on like Sprint or, you know, and
Verizon.
Well, not even Verizon. If you're in like one of these like fringe cases, then maybe you had access to the universal profile. But in the last month, all Verizon Pixel 3s are now on universal profile, and now all Google Fi Pixel 3s are on universal profile. So, I mean, I don't know what percentage of Pixel 3s that is, but it's probably more than 50%, wouldn't you say? Like,
it's
probably, I don't know, 50, 60, maybe 70% of Pixel 3s now have access to the universal profile and can use RCS with each other. So, from a pure Google standpoint, the arrival of Google's answer to iMessage has finally come. Kind of.
Sort of. It's
encryption. And also a good percentage of people still can't use it because we're waiting on the carriers. And you can't use it with iPhones. So if you can't, you can't message people on an iPhone. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal to me. And it's a big deal for RCS that that's finally a thing. And, you know, hopefully over the next year, we'll see it pretty much roll out to everything else. Another thing that happened this week, and actually it happened like this hour almost, was that Android Q leaked. So this is a huge story and you covered it, and it's, I mean, it looks like basically a developer preview zero of Android Q has just managed to completely leak out, and XDA got their hands on it, installed it on a Pixel 3. Why don't you give us a little bit of a rundown and tell us what it's all about?
So yes, XDA was able to get, I'd assume it would be an internal build of Android Q, system version Q, as some of the screenshots say. And so this is our very first look at the at Google's next version of Android. And the most obvious thing, the probably the best thing, is a system level dark mode, which finally does more than just the theme, the notifications, the quick settings and all that. It actually switches all white backgrounds when this mode is enabled to a dark gray, while other elements like the navigation wheel, quick settings, switches to dark black, OLED black, which is, I think, a rather interesting choice. And I think people who have OLED devices will appreciate it. But everybody's been wanting this. Google's apps have been slowly updating. We reported on... We saw a Chromium commit about how all system apps installed on Android should have a dark theme by Q's launch. And this is a good sign that it's finally happening, that there'll be a cohesive dark mode for Android. So that's, again, many people will be happy, and the consistency is going to be quite nice.
So all of the speculation that part of the reason for all of the Google Material theme app being white was accurate and good.
Yeah.
Turns out.
When everything's white, it makes it easy to just darken the UI. And you don't have to deal with the colorful app bars and that, because everything's white. So yeah, it's a good sign. So that was, again, the biggest piece of Android Q. And the second thing, second major thing is permissions. So iOS has this great feature where you can limit location only to when you're using an app, like say the camera app, so that nothing can, no location runs in the background. And Google is finally bringing this to Android. We saw some screenshots of that. So again, this is a common privacy thing, and I think a lot of people will appreciate it, to just have location on for apps when they're actually using it. The second thing is we saw this infographic in settings that tells users what permissions are being used, and it just presents it in an easy to understand way. And this honestly fits with what Google is doing since the Google Plus privacy thing happened, the privacy bug. They announced Project Strobe, where they are starting to limit down permissions and access to user data. And one of the things they announced last October is how users will be able to individually approve permissions. They don't have to grant them in block. So that's going to be, presumably, that's going to be reflected in this future version of Android. And just other features we saw, like tweaks of the Files app, more customizations in regards to how long the pop, the heads up notifications appear. So all in all, this is a very early preview of Android. This is without any of the customizations that we would expect on the Pixel device. So this is early days for it. And if Google follows the usual patterns, we should be seeing it by March. But again, we got a very early look at it today.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying for those of us that love the rush of getting that download as soon as it hits and trying to be, you know, the first to dig through all of the minutiae of everything that's been added. So I feel like I would really appreciate it, Google, if you're listening, if you just released a pre, I don't know, what would you call it, like a developer
preview alpha.
Yeah, we call it DPP, developer preview one. And then maybe another developer preview in like a month. And then we have the normal developer preview. Or they've been moving up the schedule of the developer preview releases for the last couple of years. So why not just move it up even further? What's happening with the release in January or in March this year?
So I have to say to Google, whatever you did with Pi in terms of the first developer preview, that was a solid operating system. That was a solid preview. Everything was stable. I could use it as a daily driver, though most people shouldn't, but I could. And whatever you're doing there, keep on doing it.
Yep. Unfortunately, it was leaked. And
unfortunately,
someone's probably going to get fired. I hope.
Yeah. this was a... I guess if you keep the connection private, if you turn off Wi-Fi, as it appears that XDA did, there's no way to track it. But this is one heck of a week out of Mountain View.
For sure. Other news out of Mountain View this week. The beloved, or I guess, I don't know, depends on how much you need this product, but the beloved Chromecast Audio has been discontinued officially. Started kind of via a Reddit thread. Someone, I guess, was talking to Google Store support or something like that, and they said that, no, we're not going to ship you one because we're not making those anymore. And he was like, what? And so we confirmed with Google that it is, in fact, completely discontinued and that it's probably not coming back. I feel like if Chromecast Audio were to come back, it would probably come back in the form of some kind of Google Assistant-enabled dongle.
Ooh. That's an interesting one. Yeah. Imagine if the dongle is able to support the microphones and all that, turn any speaker into a smart system.
Yeah, but I mean, it's weird. I mean, I'm kind of confused by this being discontinued because the original point of it was to serve people who were going into the Chromecast / Google ecosystem and wanted to cast their audio to a legacy sound system that only had, you know, digital audio in or optical, I mean, or an aux port. And those people still exist today just as much as they did 4 or 5 years ago, whatever, 4 years ago, I think, 2014, I don't know. Whenever this was announced, you know, I feel like that problem is still a problem. And so what I've seen a lot of is people on Reddit going out to the store and just porting these things because assuming Google doesn't refill this void, then these might become a hot commodity for people.
I guess the trend that Google is seeing is people just buying integrated speakers. And there are people with legacy systems.
Right.
But I would probably argue that most people didn't have their own sound systems before this. And the people that are just getting into it, they have compatible speakers. They have smart speakers that are Chromecast built in.
That's totally fine. But I guess what I'm saying is I think whenever it first launched, I already felt like it was for a minority. I don't think that they intended on selling millions of these things. I don't think that they saw it as like being a hit product. I think they saw it as filling a need. And maybe they just had a threshold that they wanted to meet for how much of a need it needed to meet for it to continue to exist. And maybe it just didn't meet that threshold. That's probably what happened.
It didn't meet the threshold for for full redesign with the new Google logo
Right,
instead of the
right,
Chrome
right,
button.
right. And that's fine, but still, that's still. I mean, I'm assuming the Chromecast platform is not going to change dramatically, and I'm assuming these things won't hit end of life for a couple of years. It's going to remain a need for some people, and it's kind of annoying that this need that Google itself was filling is now probably going to have to be filled by some third party. I'm guessing some third party is going to try and step in and make a similar product now.
Oh, that'd be interesting. You just
Yeah, so if that's even an option, I don't know what Google's rules are with that. So yeah, that's another big thing that happened this week. Also, the Wall Street Journal reported, I think yesterday, or was it today? Yeah, it was today,
small, yeah.
that the Motorola Razr, which is what many people our age at least consider to be the coolest phone ever, is coming back, and it'll be $1,500. Don't know if
Let's go.
$1,500 is cool. Is this another Nokia rebirth? Is this another BlackBerry?
This is a foldable. I don't. I can't justify this.
No, is this another
I.
Palm redo?
They should. They should have done that before making a $1,500 smartphone, in
Yeah,
my humble
definitely.
opinion. Because at the end of the day, it's kind of cool. It's like the Razr was iconic. It could be like a cheap $50, $100 thing that you just buy for to reminisce and stop and be nostalgic over. So I don't know why they didn't automatically go to that path first rather than building a full-featured smartphone.
Yeah,
So
what I would love is if they did a mini version of the original Razr design and did a very similar thing to what Palm did with the mini Palm phone.
gosh.
Just like
Oh
a tiny
gosh.
little like blink. That'd be funny.
Yeah.
Just like half the size of the original one with a really, I don't know. I don't know. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Maybe like
Yeah.
$100. $100. That'd be very compelling. $200 maybe. I don't
I
know.
can't believe we're already being nostalgic about things from the early 21st century. That's crazy.
I know.
Too soon.
All right. I guess for our last little few minutes here, you want to do a little bit of rundown on significant app updates for the week?
Yes, so Google Doc Sheets and Slides is beginning to roll out a Google Material theme redesign on the web. A welcome change. The tweaks are mostly minor. The icons, the Google Sans font being one of the bigger ones, but people should start seeing that new look in the coming weeks. YouTube is testing a new swipe gesture. So instead of having to press those forward buttons, backward buttons on the video overlay, users can now just swipe on a video to go back and forth. I think this is slightly more useful for having a convenient back button, but it's a new paradigm. And I guess what people are pointing out is everybody loves the vertical swipe from Instagram to Snapchat to now YouTube. And one last thing tied to Android 9 Pie is adaptive brightness. So this is this cool machine learning backed feature that a lot of people love, the early users of Android 9 Pie. It's the ability to have your phone automatically adjust to lighting conditions without your manual input. Over time, it'll learn the best lighting conditions that you want. But now, if you ever need to reset that training, you can go into the Digital Health Services app, which is the service responsible for controlling battery usage on the device, and you can just reset it. So that's a quick, short, convenient shortcut for you.
Cool.
Short week.
We also had that shout out in the Google app, which was, I feel like, pretty significant for us.
Pretty significant. So our APK Insight on Friday spotted a high 9 to 5G reference in a string of code. We believe that it's Google is working on the feature, and they're just, it's the way you hide things by making it obvious. So we'll be keeping track of it very closely.
Yeah. To be fair, they also shouted out Android Police, so we're not that special. They said, the string said, hi, 9 to 5, and AP.
You were first, numerically.
But we were first, so, I mean, I guess we are our first, alphabetically speaking, too. but, yeah. I guess that pretty much wraps it up for the week. It's a pretty light week, so we're probably just going to cut the show there. There's not really that much to talk about, and it's probably going to be pretty slow for the next few weeks at least. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, and you can also listen over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in as always. Thanks to Ira for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Later.